You're listening to my radio at stanpelke.com.
And a very hearty welcome to you. I'm Stan Pelke, your host for this very first podcast on stanpelke.com. I am beginning my radio with a series of readings from an original science fiction novel that I have been writing titled Project Earth, Dawn of Defiance. Each reading will also be accompanied by original music I have composed. Please check back regularly for new content as well as additional podcasts. Chapter 1. The Haunting of Charlie Spear. A crystal-clear night with only a new moon to dim the light of the stars. Every one of them seemed to have appeared, the entire panoply of heavenly lights, gathered together to shine down upon a single hemisphere, upon one northern state, upon a lonesome county road. It was the sort of night that promised that the whole cosmos was prepared to open itself up to the awestruck contemplation of the human mind. All that was required was the proper demeanor, the appropriate mental posture in the face of the infinite. Charlie Spear walked alone down the deserted, starlit road. But for the soft shuffle of his feet against the uneven ground and the skipping of a small stone or two dislodged as he walked, the world around him was deathly silent. Not a cricket to sing to the stars, nor a gust of wind to rustle leaves, nor the hoot of an owl on the prowl for mice. Charlie Spear was alone with the stars and the old deserted train station. Why he continued to be drawn to this place was beyond his reckoning. He had paced back and forth across the fading ornamental rug in the center of his grandfather's front parlor for nearly 2 hours, insisting that nothing would draw him here tonight. Not again. His pacing had almost worked. Finally exhausted, Charlie had stumbled to his room, thrown himself on his bed, and shut his eyes, convinced that he had withstood the inexplicable urge to venture out into the night. Yet no sooner had he put out the light than he was wide awake again, his mind spinning as the gnawing at his heart began all over. And so, despite every promise made under the stars, despite the string of curses Charlie had hurled at his reflection in the foyer mirror as he pulled on one of his grandfather's old tweed sports coats, despite the growing unease in the pit of his stomach and the tightness in his throat, here he was, approaching this place of cold, silent reckoning. The abandoned station had not been used for years, not since the New York Central Railroad had built a more modern and attractive station several miles to the east, across the river, closer to the hotels and restaurants that stretched along Main Street as it sped away from the Salmon River's eastern bank. The town's unexpected economic boom in the years just before the Depression had made the move well worth the investment in a new stylish station. At least that was the public explanation given by railroad men, the mayor, and dozens of employees. The failure of New York Central to sell the property, and the failure of the town to muster the collective courage to keep the site from falling into general decay, suggested a different story. Every window and doorway had been boarded up in a half-hearted attempt to keep out the curious and adventurous. But no one wanted the old train station for one simple reason. It was haunted. This was the place where Charlie Spear had been haunted ever since he was a little boy. The first time he had seen the ghost, he'd slipped away from his grandfather, who was busily buying tickets for the ride to Albany, and had wandered back toward the stall where the candy and comics were sold. The prices of soft drinks and ice cream scrawled in chalk on the board above the counter were more expensive than those at the local five and dime closer to home. It did not matter. Charlie had no money left. He'd already squandered his pocket change on gum and taffy. But he could not resist having one more look at the latest chapter in the life of his favorite comic superhero. As he stood beside the comics, a peculiar movement to his left, toward the cashier's stand, caught his eye. Turning to look, Charlie saw a black-gloved hand slip through the solid wood of the kiosk and reach toward another boy who was also studying the comics. Charlie had gasped with fear, but then, as quickly as it had appeared, the hand was gone. He stood rooted to the spot for several moments, a strange coldness creeping into his feet from the marble floor, then up his knees toward his heart. Fear turned to terror as the other little boy suddenly shrieked, dropped his comic, and toppled forward into the display of comics and regional newspapers. When his grandfather found him, little Charlie was in a frantic state as he tried to explain what he had seen to the cashier and the other boy's parents, who were desperately calling for someone to help them. Their little Ralph would not wake up. As Charlie's grandfather pulled him away and toward their train, Charlie looked back and saw the spectral body appear once more from the kiosk. The hand had reached out again, followed by an arm, part of a shoulder, and the first hint of a spherical head, featureless, shining in the light. As Charlie watched the partially emerged figure, the black clothing and glove and head or helmet seemed to melt away, revealing a corpse-like thing, like something out of one of his favorite science fiction magazines. And then the thing turned its face toward him, and their eyes met. Charlie Spear gasped and yanked on his grandfather's arm. "Grandpa, look! There it is! I told you! Look!" But Grandpa Spear was already cross and continued to walk purposefully and without slackening his pace toward Platform 2. Charlie tried again with all his might. "Wait, Grandpa! Look now!" The old man finally stopped and with a gruff huff turned to look back. But once more, there was nothing to see. The corpse had faded again behind cloth and helm, and then the partially materialized body slipped back completely into the wooden kiosk. Charlie was 8 or 9 at the time. For years after he had dreaded going into that old station, there was a Christmas holiday, probably when he was 12, when Charlie had stood in the middle of Grandfather's parlor, petrified by the thought of the impending trek through the station for a trip to Buffalo to see his late mother's parents. "Why can't I take the bus?" he said, choking back deep sobs. He had not cried like that for years, not even when his favorite dog had been hit by a lumber truck and it had to be put down. There had been a warm summer evening, the kind of evening when childhood's innocent faith in the must-be-rightness of the world demanded that nothing bad could possibly happen. On that night, Charlie had seen the specter watching from a dark window in the distinctive octagonal tower above the main entrance to the passenger lobby as his grandfather drove past the station on their way to the town hall and the annual town band concert. Charlie's heart had begun to race at the sight of the spectral head, featureless but glowing with a pale light. "Hungry?" Grandpa had asked after they had parked the car and made their way to the center of town and the Memorial Park with its statue of Colonel Reginald Johnston, the town's most famous Civil War veteran. They had already passed one storefront selling freshly baked slices of pie and an itinerant vendor offering small bags of popcorn. "No thanks, Grandpa." "Sure?" "Yes, sir." Charlie had looked back down Main Street toward the octagonal tower, but from this distance and in that light, he could not even see their windows. And then one night when he was 15, while returning from a visit to one of his aunts, he and his grandfather had passed through the heart of the train station on their way to the small parking lot on its north side. As they passed by the now-closed candy and comics stall, a corpse-like figure had emerged from the wall and passed right through the body of a janitor. No one noticed this horrible creature as it lumbered after Charlie Spear and his grandfather. Charlie stopped in stunned disbelief and turned toward the repulsive spectral corpse. Two businessmen following close behind Charlie and his grandfather, and deep in conversation, nearly collided with the teen. "Watch it!" one yelled. Grandfather turned back and put his hand on Charlie's shoulder. "Sorry, gentlemen," he said. "Charlie boy, what's up?" "Grandpa, can't you see it right there?" The old man squinted dutifully, but all he saw was a day-old newspaper that had slipped out from under someone's arm and landed on the marble floor, where it now lay forgotten. To Charlie, however, the thing had paused and was waiting for them to move on. Charlie, in turn, stood transfixed and motionless. "Come along, son," Grandfather had said softly, taking his hand from Charlie's shoulder and laying it on his forearm. Then he firmly pulled the young man along. The specter followed them at a distance and right out into the north parking lot, glowing ever brighter as they moved into the outside darkness. A year after that, the station had been shut down and boarded up. Only then had Charlie begun to hear stories from a few classmates that they too had seen strange things in the station. His best friend, Sherman Livernoise, had insisted that he'd once seen a tall, caped stranger walk through the ticket office and out into the courtyard beside the Flanagan Hotel. It was snowing, but Sherman swore the man had left no footprints in the snow. "Damnedest thing I ever seen, Charlesy," Sherman said, laughing and shuddering at the same time. "And then he just stood there, with the cold wind blowing and snapping that stupid cape of his. I swear I stood at the winder for 10 minutes watching him. He just stood there." Sherman's smile faded and his voice grew softer. "And then he turned and looked at me." "And?" Charlie pressed. Sherman just shook his head. He would say no more. A few weeks after that, another classmate, Susan Clayton, had stopped him in the hallway after school. I hear you like ghost stories. Maybe. I have one for you, Charlie. 5 years ago, my father and mother and I went to New York City for my 11th birthday. My mother just loves to shop in New York. And my father, too. And then there are the shows and the museums. Susan, your story. Oh, right. Susan took a deep breath, gathered her thoughts, and continued. Well, we had just gotten back into town, and we got off the train, and I'm sure I saw a black-gloved hand reach right out of the wall and push an old lady as she was coming down the stairs after us. I don't know what would have happened if Father had not caught her when she fell in front of us. Charlie took a step back and glared at Susan. Are you making fun of me? No, never. It's just that, well, I've heard you may have seen something like that once, and I wanted you to know I believe you. Sherm? Aye? The two young men were walking home from school along Riverside Road north towards his grandfather's farm. Did you say anything to Susan Clayton about the caped man? Me? No, sir. I can't stand Susan Clayton. You know that. Did you tell anyone else? Why would I? No, only you, and I wish I hadn't. Why? Because I want to forget. Charlie? Yep. He turned to see Charlotte Benoit walking toward him. Charlotte was lovely, almost angelic. Charlie had been trying to gather the courage ever since his peculiar talk with Susan Clayton to ask Charlotte Benoit to the community dance at the Grange. Charlie, I have to tell you something, and there's no one else I can trust. What is it, Charlotte? Promise me you won't repeat what I tell you. I promise. What's up? Charlotte looked nervously around the science lab where they were having chemistry class, then drew even closer to him. Charlie might have promised her anything in that moment, as her beautiful face drew closer to his than he had ever dared to hope it might. A few strands of her long blonde hair even touched his cheek. Charlie suddenly felt both very shy and surprisingly eager for her proximity. Her eyes were blue, except for the very edge around her pupils, which were gray. Charlie loved Charlotte's eyes. A man followed me along Riverside Road while I was walking to school today. What? He whispered back. He reached for her arm and pulled her into the relative quiet of the open chemistry storeroom. A man followed you. Are you sure he was following you? Yes. Her tone was firm, her jaw set, for at least 3 blocks. And then he just stopped in the middle of the sidewalk and turned and watched as I hurried on. He was still standing there when I passed the old station. Did anyone else see him? No, I was by myself. Have you ever seen him before? I'm not sure. Maybe. There's this man, dressed all in black. I've seen him watch our house at night from under one of the large trees on the riverbank. A man watching your house? Charlie replied. Yes, 3, maybe 4 times. And Charlie, I can never see his face. Maybe it's just covered in shadows, but even today, it was as if I could not see his eyes, his ears, or his nose. And now you think he's following you? You have to tell your parents. Charlie grabbed her arm and began to pull her from the storeroom. No, wait a moment, Charlie. I've done that. She pulled free and grabbed his wrist and pulled Charlie back toward the safety of their chemistry storeroom. My parents never see him, even when I look out the window and point toward him. She whispered into his ear. My mother has said she'll take me to see Dr. Gerhard if I say anything more about it. Charlotte's fingers found Charlie's and wrapped themselves around his. Don't say anything to anyone, please. I won't, I guess. And now I'm worried. Charlie and Charlotte never went to the Grange dance together. Charlotte's father, a wealthy lawyer from Quebec, had moved to town to help negotiate financial transactions between banks and investors in southern Ontario and the farming communities in the counties of northern New York. They lived in a large house just north of downtown with 2 maids, a cook, and a young farmhand turned gardener who lived in an apartment above the converted stable. Monsieur Benoit thought his daughter was far too good for an orphaned farm boy whose grandfather's creamery had closed down in the first year of the Depression. Charlie wanted to believe Charlotte, but it was hard to imagine that parents, loved and trusted, would dismiss a daughter's fear like that. But what would you know about the relationship between parents and children? He asked himself one day. Your parents are dead. Nevertheless, Charlie knew it was genuine fear that he'd seen in Charlotte's otherwise lovely blue-gray eyes that day. When news made its way back to town that Charlotte Benoit, beloved class valedictorian, an aspiring nursing student, had fallen down a grand stone staircase at her girls' college and broken her neck on the night of her 19th birthday, Charlie was convinced. Charlotte had also been haunted, and their ghost's reach was obviously very long. I am so sorry for your loss. were the only words he had been able to stammer to Mr. and Mrs. Benoit and Charlotte's little sisters at the funeral. He'd sat uncomfortably with his grandfather in the church throughout the eulogy, half expecting the faceless creature to wander into the service or lumber out from behind a tree at the rainy graveside committal. Charlotte's death unsettled Charlie. Someone had to be told the truth. Someone had to do something. But he was not convinced that he should or could be that someone. He returned to college after Charlotte's funeral, determined to work harder, to focus even more intently on his studies, and to put the memories of the ghostly being out of his mind once and for all. But that was harder said than done. The reality in the closing months of that fall were very different than he had intended. The station haunted his waking thoughts and his restless nights. It pressed into his head. Worse, Charlie began to imagine that he saw the ghostly faceless creature at his own college, in the evenings in the library among the book stacks, in the dining hall late at night. Even in the sun-drenched grounds outside the laboratory building, he could hardly sleep, and his grades dropped. He did not return to college after that first failed semester. Once more, Charlie tried to bury himself in his work, first on his ailing grandfather's struggling farm, then at one odd job after another. Still, the ghost followed him, haunted him, unnerved him. Not even the sleeping tablets that Dr. Gerhard finally provided him did any good. And so, step by step, day by day, Charlie Spear had become convinced that he needed to know, once and for all. What was this creature, and why did it pursue him? If he did not find answers, soon, his life would end, one way or another. How many nights had it been since Charlotte's funeral that he had not slept fitfully? If he tried, he might have been able to count them all.
I hope you've enjoyed Chapter 1, Part 1. Please check back soon for Chapter 1, Part 2. This was an original work of music and text by Stan Pelkey. Please note that any unauthorized broadcasting, public performance, copying, or re-recording of this program, its story, or its music is an infringement of copyright.